Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here. We all want to build a better business so we can be better architects. Well, a better business starts with planning for profit. Download our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects. It's free at entrearchitect.com/free course. You are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 192. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark Arlepage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. And we are back with another episode of our podcast series called The Entrepreneur Architect, where I interview you, members of the Entree Architect community. I want to know your story. I want to give you an opportunity to share some of your knowledge. We all have a story about how we were inspired to pursue a career in this profession, a story about the people who influenced us along the way, and a story about how we became Entrepreneur Architects. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, Earl Parson, Entrepreneur Architect. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, Core by BQE Software, Arcat, and Charette Venture Group. I'm going to share a little bit more about these great companies later in the show, but before we get started here, just to take a quick note right now, share some time this week to visit each one of them and let them know that you appreciate them for supporting us, the Entree Architect community. Earl Parson, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great having you here, Earl. You and I are good friends. You've been hanging out with me over at Entree Architect Academy for a long time. I've been following you with what you do with Clever Moderns. So I'm really, really excited to share your story with our audience here today.
Well, thanks. I'm super excited to be here as well. So this will be fun.
Let me tell our friends here a little bit about you. Earl Parson is an architect based in Los Angeles. He practices residential architecture as Parson Architecture and is the founder of CleverModerns.com, an online platform empowering do-it-yourself owner builders with plans and coaching. So So that gives you a little tidbit of what Earl is all about. Earl, I'd love for you to sort of share your origin story, go back to where you discovered architecture, what inspired you to become an architect, and give us the story from where you from that point to where you find yourself today.
Sure. Okay, great. So I was born and grew up in Muncie, Indiana, which is the home of Ball State University, one of the, you know, pretty good schools of architecture. So shout out to all the Ball State architecture folks listening. But I didn't go to Ball State. So I grew up in Muncie, and I had some sort of, my life intersected with architecture when I was a kid, because my best friend's dad was an architect in town back at the time, and they lived down the street, and we were in and out of each other's houses all the time. And so he was, and we would, you know, stop by his dad's office once in a while, and I saw the giant drawing boards and the you know, the electric erasers were like fascinating cool toys when you were a kid and stuff like that. And so that was, you know, I was around it a little bit that way. And that didn't directly, you know, have me wanting to be an architect per se, like to follow in his footsteps or anything necessarily. But it was just, you know, role models around you in your life of things that you could be, of the options, of, you know, when you grow up, what you might be. So it was sort of in the background that way. And then my dad owned a building downtown, just sort of as an investment and as a hobby. And he had, it was a little two story, like three storefronts wide, two stories high, just a little business building, kind of a 19th century, you know, building downtown. And so, it was kind of constantly, there were projects fixing up the building downtown. There were a couple of apartments upstairs, and I was around that a lot. So, also when I was a kid, we added on to our house, and I was around construction a lot. I was around, you know, architecture in that way. And it just sort of like, there was a moment where I just sort of started falling in love with the old buildings downtown, and, you know, observing the building across the street and the carvings in the stone from being in my dad's building, working on the apartment upstairs or fixing something or what have you. And so I sort of fell in love with buildings when I was about 10 or 12 years old, or maybe a little bit older, 13 or 14, something there. And so that was, that kind of started setting me on that path. And then my parents really encouraged it, and they would buy me architecture books all the time. And, just by the time I was in high school, I pretty much wanted to be an architect. I think at that point, it was pretty much settled for me. And, but I wanted to get out and kind of expand my horizons more than going to Ball State in Muncie, which is, you know, I just needed to get out and see the world more and do something, go somewhere else. So, I ended up in St. Louis at Washington University, and really loved it there. St. Louis is a great city for architecture, and I really loved my undergrad time in St. Louis. And then, and that was in the late 80s. And then I ended up, kept going west, and I ended up at SciArc in the early and mid 90s for grad school, and stayed in LA from there. So that's sort of, you know, worked for some architects around town, and ended up on my own. Kind of when everything melted down in the recession, and I vowed I was never going back, and so I never went back.
SciArc was a very interesting place to be during the 90s.
It was great. Michael Rotondi was the director.
Yeah.
He ran a great school, and I really enjoyed it. And there's just an incredible amount of freedom to explore architecture and your ideas the way you wanted to, and a lot of support for that kind of exploration. At the school at that time, and, you know, which I think it still probably is, you know, it's kind of how they're known. So
what did you do once you graduated?
So when I graduated, I worked for, a friend and I kind of spent a summer trying to not get real jobs. And we got some good, gigs doing some design work on the side, and, or, well, not on the side, cause that was really our thing at that point, cause we were out of school, building furniture. We did an interior suite for a graphic design company on Wilshire Boulevard that was really fun, and did some jobs like that. And then I ended up in that by the later that year, I guess. So this would have been 97, late 97 or 1998. I worked for Marmel Red Zener for a little while here in Los Angeles. I worked for Warren Wagner, who's a really good architect doing some modern and passive solar things in West Los Angeles. And then had some other gigs. I worked for Studio Works, which is Robert Mangurian and Marianne Ray, and they were big mentors of mine from SciArc, and they're in downtown Los Angeles, and they had a couple of public schools at that time. So that was really fun working with them. And I taught after that, and I taught for I had taught off and on at Otis College of Design and at SciArc a little bit. And I got a full-time gig at Pasadena City College teaching drawing for a year. And so I was full-time faculty for a one-year assignment. And that was a great experience too. And so I taught, I've taught off and on that. And then I taught, then that assignment ended after a year. And so then I moved to Keating Kong Architecture in Pasadena, stayed kind of up in that neck of the woods. And Pasadena is a beautiful city and has some great stuff going on as well. And so, and then the recession came and went. And so then that was, then I was on my own since then. So, and then Clever Modern started, we'll probably get into that a little bit more, but then that's been the last couple of years of my life. So.
So when you started Parson Architecture, was it an intentional decision to start your own firm, or what, were you downsized and decided, okay, I'm going to do this now?
I pretty much decided I was just going to do this now, and I didn't have, so there wasn't a big launch strategy or a big build up to that necessarily. I had been trying to save money wherever I could to, figuring that there would be a time in the future when I'd wanting to do that. And it was the depths of the recession in 2009. There was really no work, but I'd always loved welding and making things, and I've always been really hands-on making things, making furniture and working on my house and stuff. So I, at that point, I had been welding, and I had been dragging home scrap metal from construction sites for a while and just cooking up things in my garage with my welder, rebar and pieces of just bits and odds of things. And so then what happened in 2009, I got kind of a little bit of a boost right after sort of the layoffs and stuff, because there was a gallery show. Some friends connected me with a gallery in downtown LA in Chinatown that was had a show, and they brought together some architects and designers who were sort of struggling in the recession and had a show of, furniture and objects. At that point, and that was at Fifth Floor Gallery, and that was really fun. And so then that ended up, that did eventually lead to work, and there was that led to a client that led to another client, and then that's been a repeat client. And so some good things like that came out of just that experience. And and then it was just sort of rebuilding from there. And then in the recession, one of the things I got kind of an opportunity to build a house for my dad in Tennessee. And so that took a good chunk of my time, and became kind of a good project during that period as well. And then when that wrapped up, I started getting some other consulting, and things were coming back a little bit more. And so I didn't really formalize as Parson Architecture until a little bit later. But I started getting more consulting gigs, like with interior designers, working through drawings and details with them on a more architectural scale that they needed help with. And then I also, I got connected with some people down in Orange County, California, that have some daycare facilities. And I had the school experience from my past work when I was at Studio Works. And so the daycare was kind of a good fit that way. And I did a few really good jobs for them, and they required insurance. And it was clear that I needed to bring a bigger level of professionalism to my business structures with a corporate client like that. And that was really good for me. I'm not really working in that area right now anymore, but it was a great opportunity to grow into those more, create some a little bit more, I guess I would say, like established business practices and getting insurance and really creating a proper DBA and calling myself Parson Architecture. And then that made me want a better website, and it all just, bit by bit, you just kind of keep improving things.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to ask you about your welding, because I know you're a welder, and where and when did that happen? Because I know that's a big part of your life and what you do. Talk about that a little bit.
So when I was a kid, my grandpa had a, my grandparents lived on a farm in southern Indiana, and my grandpa was just, you know, he could do anything. He was my superhero when I was a kid. And he had, you know, he made everything that he had on his farm. They, my mom still tells the story about how when he was, when power, when they brought power through, they had no electricity, you know, when they set up their farm in the 30s down in there. And when they brought electricity through the area, he got a book and learned how to wire, run the wiring, and he wired his whole farm himself. And the guy had to come out and, you know, there was an inspection to connect to the cooperative or whatever it was. And the guy that inspected said it was the best, the best one he had ever seen.
Yeah.
And that's just how he was. He built all his buildings himself on the farm, and I would get him to tell me stories about how he did it. And there was some kind of device that, like a, it was, sounds like it was almost like a kind of a wheelbarrow contraption that they would load with dirt and have the horses haul it out of the basements and stuff when they excavated. And it was, there was, you know, he told me all these things about how they did that stuff, how he laid out the buildings. And that was always fascinating to me. But anyway, he, so he had a welder, and, you know, he repaired his machinery and stuff on the farm. But then he would make like crazy looking plant stands and like stuff. He was always just making weird contraptions out of stuff from the farm. And the one that really, I saw this, my, I guess my first aha moment really in my life that I can pin down is that there was this, there's this weird looking C clamp. I've got it over there on the shelf. It's, I don't know if you can, well, you're, no one's going to see the video here. There's a blog post on Clever Moderns. The very first blog post talks about this. So they can scroll back through the blog if they want to see this.
You can send me the link. I'll put it on the show notes.
Yeah. Okay. So the this thing was a piece of farm machinery that was sort of like vaguely U-shaped with notches on one side. And he welded a big heavy nut and bolt to one side of it so that it created, he needed a C-clamp in his shop. And he, so he scrounged around and found something that was vaguely C-shaped, and it was some farm machine part. I don't really know what it is. And welded a nut on it that he could thread a bolt through and that would close against the other side and create a C-clamp. And when he showed me that, when I was, well, I must have been 10 or 12, and he showed me that, and it really blew my mind. And I think that phrase is way overused, but as a kid, to see this thing, and he's made the, here he has made this C-clamp out of just a piece of scrap, and it's a very cool looking thing, that I, it dawned on me. I had this realization that, like, my dad had C-clamps in his workshop, but they just looked like normal C-clamps. And I knew what a C-clamp was. And here's this C-clamp that does this. It's not like any other C-clamp in the world. And it, I realized that everything on every store shelf out in the world and everything around us in our lives and everything that exists is just that way because somebody made it that way. Somebody decided to make it that way, and everyone else like went along, and now that's the way they all are. For no better reason than like somebody thought that up and everyone else just decided to make it that way, and it just became the normal way to do it. And that like nothing really has to be that way ever at all, any of it.
It sounds and to me, just, knowing you, Earl, it sounds to me like everything that you're doing today started with that C-clamp.
It totally started with the C-clamp. And yeah. And so I don't know. It was just kind of like I you know, get sort of goosebumps or something when I think about that, really, when I really embrace that idea. So anyhow, that was that. And so then I didn't really get a welder and start welding until, well, I learned how to weld at SciArc. So Randall Wilson was the shop master at SciArc in those days. And he taught all the object making classes. Not, he didn't teach them all, but he ran the shop and he taught a lot of them. And so he had a, there was a summer class that summer that he called Cycles of Expression, and everyone built bicycles. I don't remember if it was a summer class or a regular, it doesn't matter. So anyway, I took the bicycle class with Randall, and then that's when I learned to weld. And so we all made bikes, and then the next year I was the TA, or the next time he taught it, I was the TA for the class, and that was just, you know, more of that and a great experience. And Anyway, so then once I bought my house and then, you know, had a garage that I could really set up in and not just make it do whatever I want with it and not worry about a landlord and all that stuff and have the space to do it, then I got a welder and started accumulating equipment and stuff. And then, you know, it's been, well, I mean, it kept me sane during the recession because there was, you know, not a lot of work and I just had to have a creative outlet. And so then and then when that show came along, you know, it was really great because then I got to make even more stuff and really kind of present it. And that was fun.
Yeah. And it got you noticed. You put it in the show and that got you noticed as an architect, got you some work, and the rest is history. Very cool. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect: FreshBooks, Core by BQE Software, Arcat, and Charette Venture Group. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for the whole team, buy project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. It does everything. My favorite feature in FreshBooks is the automated invoice reminders. I love this. I think sending invoices and getting paid is one of the biggest barriers to our success as entrepreneur architects. Who has time, right? But if we don't send out invoices, we don't get paid. FreshBooks makes it easy to send out invoices and get paid online with a click of a button. And when your client doesn't pay you on time, FreshBooks will send them a friendly email reminder through a simple system that you set up and control. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. One of the most often requested resources here at the Entree Architect community is project management software. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? BQE Core revolutionizes the way architects manage projects, time and expenses, billing and accounting. Made by BQE, the company behind ArchiOffice, Core saves you time while giving you the visibility, the flexibility, and the power you need to grow your firm. Work from anywhere, seamlessly collaborate, and gain transformative insights with Core's groundbreaking platform. Listeners here at the Entree Architect podcast can get a free 15-day trial of Core at entrearchitect.com/BQE. That's entrearchitect.com/BQE. If you've been listening here to this podcast anytime during the past few months, you have heard me talking about our friends, Arcat. And hopefully you're already using their free resources on a regular basis. But for those of you who have not yet checked out Arcat, it's a great tool for small firm architects. Arcat has a huge library of free content, CAD, BIM, specifications, and more. They've done all the work for you. It will save you time and money. You need a spec? Click on over and download the CSI 3-part specification in multiple formats. How about a CAD detail or a BIM object? All free, click of a mouse. Arcat has tons of building product content ready for you to use, and it's all completely free. You don't even have to register to download the content. That is my favorite part of Arcat. Visit our friends at Arcat at entrearchitect.com/Arcat. That's ARCAT, entrearchitect.com/Arcat. And let them know that I sent you from the Entree Architect podcast. Charette Venture Group invests in small to mid-sized architecture firms with the goal to create action behind aspirations. CVG seeks architect clients with a passion for growth and dedication to becoming a larger, stronger business. Entree Architect is an investment partner with CVG, so I know firsthand how their support has transformed my business and my life. We also have several members inside the Entree Architect Academy who are investment partners with CVG as well, and it is truly a pleasure to watch these firms grow. The team at Charette Venture Group is ready to help you take your architecture firm to the next level. Your firm is unique. Your challenges aren't. Charette Venture Group can help. To schedule a free consultation with Charette Venture Group or to take their free architect business assessment to see exactly where you stand as a business, visit them today at entrearchitect.com/CVG. FreshBooks, BQE Software, Arcat, and Charette Venture Group. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So the was there in all of this time that you just talked about, was there other than becoming an architect, because that's everybody's big goal when you're becoming an architect, was there any other big goal that you had that you reached for and you achieved and that you can sort of share with us how you achieved it?
I think I'll pivot more towards the clever modern story with this, which I think is really so the achievement, I guess, would have been the I think in a lot of ways, the achievement was just entering the Charette Venture Group business plan competition. I ended up getting an honorable mention, and so you could point to that as the achievement. But in my mind, really, it was just getting the mental and psychological hurdles past entering it.
Yeah.
Because the previous year I had, been aware of it, and I didn't enter. And I didn't enter, I guess, because I just didn't feel like I had a unique enough proposition to really go anywhere with it. And I guess there were some confidence issues wrapped up in all of that as well. And by the next year, I had really started developing, the ideas that became Clever Moderns. And so I was determined to pull together a business plan and really do that and enter it. And I think it was just getting over the sort of internal dialogue preventing me from entering. That was the big, and I think what the things that had me achieving that were, listening to you, I blame you, and Seth Godin, two voices sort of encouraging me to just, you directly to me, but Seth Godin in the abstract, encouraging a person to have the courage to do something and develop something and develop an idea or a thing and to be able to put it out to the world and say, here I am and I made this, and this is what I've done, and to, have the courage to follow your ideas through. And it was really a lot of work. And it was me sitting down almost every morning, quietly reading and writing for 45 minutes to an hour to developing these ideas. And I would write, I would just write long form, on paper on 8.5 by 11 pages, just put a header and start writing on the topic. Sometimes it would be outlining things like that. Sometimes it would be taking old drawings that would have been headed for recycling and laying them down on my desk in a thick stack and flattening them out. And then I got a multi-pack of Sharpie pens in all the colors. And so diagramming things out, being a visual thinker, I can write all the words I want, but sometimes just drawing words and connecting them with lines and putting boxes around them in the appropriate colors and, side lists on the side of related ideas that I need to follow through on. And so it was sort of like visual outlining in large format in color. And all of that funneled into my business plan and helped really just, I'm still amazed at kind of the tremendous amount of work I put into clarifying my thinking and developing the ideas. And I think, it also showed me again, I think you learn this a lot in school, but when you're out of school for a while, you have to kind of relearn these things sometimes. But just the idea that you can have an idea, but then it still may take a lot of work to develop the idea to the point that it's actually something worth considering. And it's that hard work that is like, that's the hard part, really developing the idea. that can lead you then to implementing. So,
Talk a little bit about what Clever Moderns is.
So Clever Moderns is a platform that I'm developing. So I'll sort of talk about where I want to take it, but I'll talk about where we're at right now, because we're just developing it. So it's an idea that, it came to me in this way, I guess. So I was thinking about trying to get better clients, and who are my best clients, and how do I, and also about when you get a good client, how do you present your ideas to them and get them to buy in on your best ideas that may be the more unorthodox ideas, and people can be afraid of that. And so there's, how do you present all that? And so it occurred to me, well, what if I develop the ideas first and put them out there? And then people that like the ideas maybe will buy into the ideas once they see them fully formed, rather than get the client and then try and hope that they're going to be willing to go along with the ideas. And so that was part of the idea. And then it was, and it's kind of an idea about selling house plans, online. And there's a ton of websites that sell plans. So it's a passive income strategy for me as an architect. But then I had also had a lot of ideas about the clients. Okay, there are a couple of clients that came to me through the welding for the furniture that I had had in that show. And they were good friends. And now, it's been a while and we're overdue, but with the three of us, we'll go out for sushi on a Friday evening. And there's a little bit of a community there around us and the work and just the kind of shared enjoyment of each other's company and all of that. So they're more than clients at this point. And they were total strangers to me before. And so there were ideas about community, growing a community around a group of clients who are all interested in the same things architecturally and lifestyle-wise. And, there's never been a better time to grow a community than today, the world we live in, and being able to develop communities online and that way. So it became ideas about do-it-yourself people building their own houses with not just selling the plans, but providing coaching and support for people that wanted to build their own house. And I use this, the kind of do-it-yourself. I think it's a spectrum, right? You can do it yourself and hammer every nail yourself and do every bit of it yourself. Or you can do it yourself and act as your own GC. And you're still hiring out a lot of the work, but you're just really in control of it and doing some of it yourself. And so, Clever Moderns is an idea about growing a community around that whole idea. People supporting one another, sharing ideas, sharing tips, getting direct consulting from me as support and feedback as part of it, and buying the plans as an income stream for me, and as a way to design some really good modern houses that can be very simple. And, I think there are a lot of people out there that, I think the websites like House and Pinterest that show people are really into the idea. I think a lot more people love the idea of having interesting architecture and design around them than are actually going to go out and hire an architect to do that. We just know this as architects. And so I think there's a hidden market in there somewhere for people that are, and some of those people would never do it themselves, and some would totally do it themselves if they just had a little help and some encouragement. And so, so there was an aha moment, back to that idea with Clever Moderns, which was, I had all these ideas percolating around in my head. And I remember I was standing in my kitchen, probably doing the dishes, listening to you on a podcast. And it dawned on me, what if rather than charging, the thing we always want to do is present a greater value proposition so that we can charge a greater, better fee for our services, right? That's a thing that we all try to do as architects, I would hope. Or as a goal. And so I had the idea, well, what if I just inverted that completely and turned it on its head? And what if I just gave away the plans for free? And so the way that I was thinking of it was like, well, I allowed myself to go down the road of that thought by saying, well, what if I just presented that as a given, the plans are free, then what would be the necessary conditions? How does the rest of it have to work to get that to be part of it? You know, if that's going to be the central idea, then then there's just monetizing it some other way, or there's other, you know, that's not paying the bills, but something else is. And so then like, that's what got my wheels turning on. There could be other coaching support. There could be other products that are sold along the way, that the free plans become, you know, the way in, and then there you're selling other things. You're not really selling the design or the plans. And then that really started unlocking a lot of new ideas for me about sort of how to present this platform and what to do. And it really wasn't. And so now it's kind of morphed a little bit. And I'm about to launch do you know when this podcast will air? Do you have a sense of that?
Probably the first week of November.
Okay. So I'm working pretty closely on having the first free plans actually on the website, and they'll probably be, now I have a really good goal to get them on by the time this airs. It's sort of turned into that the free plans are going to be really basically like a schematic design level proposition. And then at some point, then I'll be adding full construction plans, as a for sale product. And right now what we're doing is, as you know, because you're following it. So we're building our first prototype houses. And what we've also done is, because, you know, the backstory with my grandpa on the farm and some of that stuff that I've, and the welding and the metal that I've always been interested in, I've always loved Quonset huts. And so we are building the first plans, and the beginnings of the platform have now ended up being, which wasn't, it was in there, but it wasn't the central focus of everything in the original business plan and the original concept. But now it's really kind of taken over, and I'm just really having a lot of fun with it. So my husband and I bought some land in northern Arizona, and we're building a group of Quonset hut houses on our property there. And so we're calling it the Quompound, and we're just having a lot of fun. We spent this whole year basically starting with raw land and developing it, and our first two Quonset huts are well underway. We're racing the freeze right now to get them, you know, done, to get the one that has water in it, you know, done before it really freezes. And so all of our, and it's amazing, you know, they say the more you niche down in your market and the more specific you are, the more like your raving fans will come and find you. I mean, it's bizarre, and it's become so true for me with this. So I've got a Facebook group for do-it-yourself Quonset fans. It's called DIY Quonset Dwellers on Facebook. I've got a newsletter that's growing because people are finding my blog who are interested in Quonset huts and Quonset hut houses. And I've got a great Instagram following that's growing also pretty well. And so
what's the Instagram username?
So the Instagram is Quonset House. Okay. On Instagram.
We'll have links to all of that on the show notes.
Great. I have a Clever Moderns Instagram account that I'm not really using because the Quonset house just completely took over. So, and the website and blog are just at clevermoderns.com. We're building the Quonset's there. And, we have bigger plans for the spring. We're going to start our next building in the spring. And
what would you say was your biggest struggle in putting together Clever Moderns, having it evolve into the Quonset houses, which now is feeding Clever Moderns. It's sort of, at first, maybe you thought it was two separate things, but they've become the same. They've been evolving into one platform. What was the struggle once you sort of got past the business plan of, you know, having the achievement of having the business plan be recognized, executing on that business plan, having Clever Moderns launch, start building these houses? What was a big struggle that you may have come upon, and how did you overcome it?
Well, so there were a couple of big struggles. Creating the newsletter was a big struggle for me. I'm not like the most introverted person in the world, but I'm not the biggest extrovert either. And just putting my ideas out there is slightly terrifying for me. And so creating the newsletter was something I'd wanted to do. And I was just afraid of it. The fear of doing that was really holding me back. And I was talking to a friend who is she's sort of a business coach and a leadership development, pro. It's her job. She goes around training people all the time, and she's really good at it. And her company is, can I give her a shout out?
Because yeah,
she's been
sure.
really great. Absolutely. Her company is called Talent Grow. Her name is Haleli Azulai. She's been a big resource for me and a lot of support. We have coffee once in a while, but she's just a good friend. And so she was advised, she said, well, get, if your newsletter is really like, if you're, you know, get to hire it out, get someone to write your newsletter for you. Just, you know, I know a guy. I'm like, who's the guy, you know? I put it all together. I pull the bullet. I write bullet points. I write a couple of paragraphs. I pull the images together. And then I send him an email. I'm like, here's what I wanted to say. And then he puts it all together in MailChimp and sends it out. And he sends me a draft and I review it. And I had to make a rule for myself at the beginning that I'm only going to let myself have one edit. So he sends it to me. I can go through it and make any changes I want. But then my rule with myself is that when I send it back to him, I send it and I say, here are the changes, send it. I don't allow myself a second time to go through it because it'll never go out if I do that.
Yeah.
So that was a big struggle. And now it's easy. Like, I'm not as afraid of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was afraid of putting it out. And now my biggest related struggle is like getting these free plans onto the web. It's terrifying to me to put the free plans on the website.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you need to go through, because that's your goal. You need to put together an action plan and say, okay, these are the incremental pieces I need to do to get to that goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say, I mean, and then my secret weapon is airplane mode. So when I really want to sit down with something and focus, I put my phone in airplane mode. And I love putting, this is one of my big tips to the listening audience, use airplane mode on your phone. Because there's something about airplane mode that's just like, it stops every incoming thing, but it's also like a psychological barrier for me. And it says, you know, it means I've sat down and I've figured out what is the most important thing for me to be doing right now. And if a client calls, I can call them back. If, you know, something in the outside world needs my attention, I've already decided that there's no way that that can be more important than what this thing is right now in front of me that I decided I need to do. And so airplane mode. And, you know, I'll go in airplane mode for a few hours in the afternoon and it's super productive time for me. It's great. So, yeah, I need to make my short list of final steps to get the free plans on. And I need to be as specific with the list as possible, because the more vague your action items are, the more room there is for you to like wander around in some other thing that's not related. And get that on there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been fun watching you grow and have these successes over and over again. I know it's hard, you know, it's a struggle to get to where you want to go. I think we all experience that. We all have these ideas of what we want to be. And it takes some action and intention to get to where you're going. And you do that. And I want to give you credit for that. You've come a long way. And I really enjoy watching it grow. Let's get into some quick questions, and we can wrap things sure. up here. At what age did you decide to become an architect?
I think that was around 14 or 15 for me.
What's your target market? And that could be Parson or Clever Moderns.
Well, so the target market really with Clever Moderns at the moment is, do-it-yourself, Quonset-obsessed people. And I'm trying to figure out if there's like a more demographic description of who those people are, which I haven't quite figured out yet. But I mean, they're finding me and they're signing up and they're joining the conversation and stuff. So there I'm reaching them, but yeah. I wish I had a better demographic description, but I don't really.
That's a very interesting idea, because as you build your community and more people are attracted to your community will tell you who your target market is. Mm-hmm. So that's a very interesting idea of sort of building the community first and then having the community tell you who that market is.
Right.
Well, this might be a difficult question. Stipulated sum, hourly, percentage-based fee, what's your firm's fee structure? So maybe you can talk both Parson Architecture and how the monetization is going to work with Clever Moderns.
So with Parson Architecture, I pretty typically I will set a stipulated sum for that, and I generally base that on a percentage, because mm-hmm. it's just easier to talk about with the client that way.
Right. So internally, it's percentage, but the contract is a step.
Yeah, and then I'm getting some better things in place as far as one of the things I've realized is when you can present a stipulated sum to a client, and you can have all these limitations and sort of structure for the process and stuff in the contract. But once they sign the contract and you're underway with them, they don't ever go back and look at the contract. And they don't know when you're at the end of a phase that it matters that, you know, that work is done now. And if they want to revisit that, they got to pay you additional and whatever. You have to remind them of the process as you go through the process. And you've talked about this as well in the past. Yeah. So, ways of, the last, one, and it went really well. I created a kind of flow chart graphic that outlined the phases and described the meetings in a sort of graphic that way. And, they loved it. It was very easy to understand. And then, you know, I could remind them where we are in the process, and that worked well.
Yeah.
In that case.
That's a great idea.
So, with Clever Moderns, I'm a couple of ways I'm going to be monetizing, I think, coming up pretty soon. So I'm going to rework the resources page of my website and put consulting on there, at $150 an hour to just, cause a lot of people now are coming, to me and wanting to pick my brain. They think the Quonset thing is wonderful and they're excited about watching my progress and whatever. And they'd love to pick my brain.
Yeah.
And,
your brain's net free.
Yeah, I'm going to be happy to have them pick my brain. I have it just on the website that here's how it works if you want to pick my brain. And then I've got the Facebook group if you want to just bat ideas around with other like-minded folks who love Quonset huts, join the Facebook group. And that's a great place for that too. And it's free, you know? So there's that. Now I've also had some folks approach me recently who have got some land in Texas and they want to build they want something different and they really want a Quonset hut house. And so they are, I'm having a phone meeting with them on Friday, to present, some different ways my services could work to work with them on their house. And so, and they seem pretty, of all of the ones I've talked to, they seem very serious about, you know, wanting to move forward. And they've talked to a Quonset hut manufacturer. They've got floor plans developed that I'll help them massage and improve. And they seem like they considered getting a local architect, but they are, but they really love what I'm doing and love my enthusiasm. So they really want to work with me. And I happen to be licensed in Texas, so that works well. And So for them, I'm not entirely clear on. I'll probably have a couple of different ways to formulate the services because it's really not a.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure how much real handholding all the way through and involvement. Or I think it'll be a simpler proposition with then consulting as needed, at an hourly rate through the process.
I find it very interesting that sort of your interest in welding turned into a show, which then blossomed into clients. And now your interest in building an online platform attracted some clients, got some interest, and is now blossoming into potential clients. And so it's very interesting how sort of your Parson architecture is out there. And it's you do some work here and you do it more traditionally in other ways. But these other interests that you're pursuing and that you're spending time developing are turning into not only what you expect them to be, but they're also coming back to Parson architecture and sort of helping to feed Parson architecture as well.
Right. Yeah. It's been a kind of an amazing When I really look back over the last few years, it's been kind of an amazing transition and process that I've gone through.
Yeah. Other than architecture, what makes you happy?
Well, I let's see. I play the piano, and I really love. I just sit and I have a piano lesson every week, and I really enjoy that. I think it's good. It's enjoyable and it's relaxing and it's difficult also. And I wanted something that would, when I was teaching, I realized that it's hard to learn new things when you're an adult. It can be, because when you're a kid, all you do is learn, because everything, you have to learn everything.
Right.
And then that tapers off and then you quit learning new things. And we, especially as architects, we have to keep on that. Right. So, with piano, you can play relatively well, but you can always improve. I mean, with anything in life, you can always keep improving. But it's, you can always be learning a new piece, and it's always fresh and interesting and new. And I don't know, I really love that. I have a great time with my dogs, and we like taking the dogs out. And especially now that we have this property in Arizona, I really love being out in nature and, observing that. Getting really interested in like geology and some of that stuff because of the rocks on our land and some of that stuff that's interesting. And we're right by the Grand Canyon. So, I mean, there's all that, and that's amazing. So
what's the best advice you ever received?
Well, I was thinking about this, and I think that I think back when I was a kid and not when I was a kid, but when I was through school and I wasn't licensed, and Jim Love, the architect, my friend's dad, who lived down the street from us, and we always stayed in touch over the years, and he passed away a few years ago, but he always told me, get your license. He always was in the back of my head telling me to get my license. And Early on, I was saying, it wasn't really because of him that I became an architect. But once I started down that path, he would always say, well, we all make mistakes. And when I would talk about his dry humor, would have him saying, oh, we all make our mistakes in life, about my choice to become an architect. But he always encouraged me to get my license. And I think of him fondly a lot. And when I think about advice I was given over the years.
One personal habit or daily routine that contributes to your success?
Definitely, I'm going to put in a plug for meditation on this one, because I really suffer. I think, and a lot of, it's described as being chronic with entrepreneurs, that you're just trying to go a million directions all at once, and there's so many good ideas out there that being able to just settle down and focus on something is really hard sometimes, or all the time, most of the time. And I think of it in comparison to, like, when you try and go through the grocery store and you don't get a cart or a basket and you're just walking through because you think you're just getting one or two things, and then you start like adding, and soon you're like juggling all this stuff without any way to really manage it or deal with it. And so when I'm when I'm meditating, I sometimes had this sort of mental image of just like setting things down one at a time and bringing order to it. Because I, you know, there's just like so many ideas and thoughts going through my head all the time that it's hard to, I think that brings a ton of focus and calm and really a lot of the, I would say letting go of a lot of the fear and setting it down that like had me not having the newsletter or even pursuing the whole Quonset Hut thing, you know, has come from a kind of calm that I've gotten from meditating. So, you know, every morning, no, and I'm not that good at it. I don't do it every day, but I wish I did. And that would be my goal. 20 minutes in the morning, get it going.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think with architects in general, we have so many hats we're wearing, especially small firm architects. It's a big help for me as well. And I too struggle with doing it every day. But when I do, I feel it. I can tell when I did. How about a recommended app or an internet resource?
So, okay, I have a couple of things that I can recommend on this area. So there, I use, my browser is Google Chrome. And so for a while I had Chrome opening to my email, and then I realized like that's the wrong thing, because you don't want to just open your browser every time and be like confronted with the email in your inbox. Yeah. That's not the way to do it. So there is an add-on to Chrome called Speed Dial 2. And that basically brings up when you open the browser, whatever pages you set, they appear as tiles on the screen. And so I have my email and my calendar, and I have Slack on there for the Entree Architect Slack channel, and I've got Trello because I have some Trello stuff going on. And so I have several things on there, and then it allows me to open it and easily go to the one that I want without being bombarded with the content unless I choose it.
Like a personal dashboard.
Yeah. So I really like that. Trello is a good one as well. I'm developing an online course to go along with Clever Moderns, and I'm outlining it in Trello, and that's working really well. That's a great tool. The third one I'll throw out there is if you don't have a – I know you said one. So I'm giving you three.
That's okay.
Everybody needs a password manager, and I really like LastPass. It's free, and it's been great. I've had it for a few years now, and so all my passwords are – it'll generate a – complex secure password for you if you need it. It stores them all. It's a little bit scary because then if somebody broke into LastPass, they'd have everything. But it's better than trying to keep track of it some other way. And it's been great having that.
Recommended book and why?
I just started Mindset by Carol Dweck, and I'm really excited about reading that. And she's a psychologist, and her thesis is there's, in her framework of looking at it, there are two types of mindset. There's a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. And she's done tons of studies on people of all ages, from little children up to through adults. And you can, around any given it's topic specific, apparently, in your sort of individual, in your psychology, in your mind, the way you categorize the world, you could have a fixed mindset in one area and a growth mindset in another area. But you know, it's basically, if you feel chronically stuck in a particular area of your life, you probably have a fixed mindset. In other words, your opinion of yourself and your abilities in that area is that it's fixed, it's static, and you cannot improve it. People with a growth mindset have the idea that, like, I can always learn new things. I can always improve from where I'm at and grow. And it sort of goes back to there's an old quote by Henry Ford that I'm not going to get exactly right, but it's, you know, the paraphrased version is, if whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And so it's sort of like a studied validation of that by a team of psychologists. And she wrote this book, and it's pretty interesting so far.
It's a great book. I read it, and it's a very, very good book. I highly recommend it as well. Let's wrap up with the one question that I ask all my guests, and then we can end with a parting piece of advice. Let's start with the question that I ask everybody. What is one thing that an entrepreneur architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think it's after going through the experience with the business plan, I think it's really, if you really want to improve your business for tomorrow, I think you have to think ahead about that. You have to put in the hard work of sitting down with a blank sheet of paper, like going back to my experience with the business plan and doing that. It's hard. It's just hard work to develop the ideas that are going to shape your business. But if you think about it, that you're going to get from here to 5 years from now anyway, one way or another. 5 years from now is going to show up on your doorstep. So you can go through it with a little bit of a plan. Any kind of a plan is better than just fumbling through it, but you're going to get there anyway. You're going to end up there. Better to have some kind of plan.
That's very good advice, a very good observation. 5 years is coming whether you plan it or not. So you might as well plan it. I did an episode just a few weeks ago, episode 187, the 60-minute business plan. And mm-hmm. So if you think it's overwhelming and daunting, I challenge you to do it in 60 minutes. And that episode will show you how. So build a business plan right now. Great advice. What's some parting advice, some guidance for our listeners as an entrepreneur architect working your way through your plans, through your life? What is some parting guidance?
So when I described the aha moment that I had about giving away the plans for free and then rearranging all the rest of the ideas around that concept, the way that I think when I've reflected back on that moment, I compare it to the experience that you have when you're developing a design and you're staring at your floor plan and you've been working on it for weeks, and then you take the plan and rotate it on the page or on the screen and start looking at it from the other direction. It looks totally different all of a sudden, right? When you flip the plan, it really, you see things differently. You see things from a different angle. And that's true of, I think, everything in life. I think when you you can't help but being accustomed to coming at things from the way that you normally come at them. That's just how we operate as human beings. But if you can figure out a way to take a fresh approach, flip the plan, take a different set of given conditions to your problem, you'll get all kinds of new ideas for how to solve whatever it is you're trying to, whether it's a design problem or any kind of problem or any kind of idea that you're trying to work through. So flip the plan is sort of one of the things that I'm really a little catchphrase that I cling to sometimes to bring fresh thinking. So flip the plan.
I love that. I love that idea. It'd make a great brand. Go see if URL is available. Flip the plan. a whole new business for you.
All right, here we go.
That's a great, great advice. So let's wrap things up. What's the best way that our listeners can reach out and say hi and say thanks and connect with you?
So clevermoderns.com is really the central locus of all of that. There's a contact page on there that's got all of the, you can find the Facebook group that way. I'd love to have more architects in the Facebook group. It just adds a fun dimension to the discussion. I get busted on some of my details in there. It's fun. So that's, you can find that. That'll have a link to the Instagram. If anybody wants to start getting the newsletter once a month with all the updates from Arizona. So clevermoderns.com, and then search around on there.
It's all there. Everything Earl's doing is clevermoderns with an S .com. Earl, thank you. Thanks for hanging out with me here for the hour or so and sharing your story and sharing your knowledge with the Entree Architect podcast.
My pleasure. And thanks so much for having me, Mark. You've been a big inspiration for me. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. If you want to be featured here at the Entree Architect podcast as part of the Entrepreneur Architect series, I love this series and I want to share your story, shoot us an email at podcast@entrearchitect.com and let us know that you want to be featured here on the show. I want to share your story. I want you to have the opportunity to share your knowledge with the Entree Architect community. So podcast@entrearchitect.com. Send me an email. Let me know you want to be on the show. And if you liked what we shared here today, I ask you to share it with a friend. Pick one friend who you think might benefit from this episode and share this link, entrearchitect.com/episode192. This is episode 192, and that is the link to share, entrearchitect.com/episode192. Share it right now. But before you do that, don't forget to visit the website to learn more about our free profit course for small firm architects. It's a free course that will show you how to be a profitable architecture firm. Download it for free at entrearchitect.com/free course. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to build a better business so that you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. So for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill, is most important. And so I would say, like, that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.